Welcome to Local Talk Monday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with station manager and engineer Mike Murphy. Mike, did you have a good weekend?
I did. It was restful. I mean, it was the highlight of my weekend was going to the farmer's market, which I really enjoy.
Wonderful. Yeah. Was there music?
There was. There was a couple of guys playing guitar and a trombone, and it worked pretty nicely. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it's a great destination for Saturday morning.
Yep.
Hey, we've got a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, this 11th day of July, 2022. It's currently 74 degrees. Today there are additional thunderstorm forecasts with a high of 85 with winds out of the northwest between 7 and 14 miles per hour and a low overnight of 63 degrees. The radar showing thunderstorm precipitation practically to the western border of South Dakota currently. So apparently we're going to have some more rain today. There is a pleasant forecast of 84 for tomorrow on Tuesday. No rain in the forecast, but more heat later in the week with highs in the 90s on Friday and next weekend. So here at KHOI, we are wishing Keith Morgan a pleasant retirement as Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. Keith has been providing monthly installments for many years here on KHOI. Story County is in the safe care of a new Emergency Management Coordinator, Melissa Spencer, and she'll be here later in the hour. So that's coming up. Yep. First, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a summary of the news last week throughout the state.
The Iowa Supreme Court makes another decision about abortion. Yes, that was another derecho that roared through the state last week. And new details about another carbon capture pipeline plan in Iowa, all part of what made news around the state last week. The Iowa Supreme Court denied Governor Reynolds' request to revisit its decision in an abortion case involving a 24-hour waiting period. The court's decision came in a challenge to a 2020 law that requires a 24-hour waiting period to receive an abortion. The governor had argued that abortion restrictions in Iowa should be reviewed by courts under a more permissive legal standard called the rational basis test. Right now, abortion restrictions in Iowa must survive the undue burden standard, meaning abortion restrictions that place a substantial burden on patients must be struck down. Planned Parenthood North Central States and the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa applauded the decision. The court's denial meant the waiting period would take effect as the case returned to Johnson County District Court for further proceedings. The governor's request for the Iowa Supreme Court to rehear the waiting period case is one of two legal avenues she's pursuing to further restrict abortion in Iowa. She also plans to ask a Polk County District Court to lift an injunction blocking the state's so-called fetal heartbeat law. Iowa law now bans most abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Laura Bellin and I will talk about all of this tonight at 7 o'clock on KHOI Radio's Capital Week. Also last week, another storm called a derecho rumbled through Iowa on Tuesday night, causing damage and leaving thousands of people without power. The windstorm, which generated a tornado in Emmett County, along with hail, cut through the northern half of the state, reaching its peak as it swept through South Dakota and northwest Iowa. The most severe part of the storm stayed in the northern half of Iowa, though the southern half, including the Des Moines metro, saw gusty winds and rainfall. More than 11,000 Mid-American Energy customers lost power, 6,000 of them in the metro. Damage was reported around the state, including at Principal Park in downtown Des Moines, the home of the Iowa Cubs baseball team. That damage included the team's new and temporary batter's eye, which fell into and brought down part of the park's center field fence. Wind gusts at the Des Moines airport reached the low 50-mile-an-hour range, while 68-mile-an-hour winds hit Mason City. It was the third derecho in Iowa in 2 years. And while these storms rolled through the state last week, word came out that Iowa corn and soybean plants have continued to suffer in some parts of the state from lots of heat and not enough moisture, especially in the far northwest part of Iowa. Big parts of Plymouth and Woodbury counties were said to be in extreme drought. It's the first time in nearly a year that any part of Iowa was that dry. Much of the state's corn crop is at its peak demand for water, and the soybean crop is approaching its peak. In the past 3 weeks, the percentage of the state's corn crop that is rated good or excellent has dropped from 86% to 77%. Soybeans that were rated good or excellent dropped from 82% to 77%. Also last week, a Montana man who prosecutors say stole more than $10,000 from a disabled Cedar Rapids derecho victim under the guise of being a handyman was sentenced to time served for a mail fraud conviction. 57-year-old William Allen Hurlbut Jr. was sentenced to 14 months in prison, which represented the time he has spent in federal prison since his arrest. Authorities said he came to Iowa in August of 2020 after the derecho windstorm had caused widespread damage. He started doing repair work and met a disabled resident whose home needed more than $10,000 in repairs. He got the money before doing work on that property, then spent it on gambling and other expenses while doing little or no work. In Coralville last week, a 3-year-old boy was shot to death in an apartment. Authorities said it was too early to determine whether Demaria Sanders was a victim of a homicide or an accidental shooting. The Johnson County Medical Examiner's Office said it likely would take up to 6 weeks for information to become public. And in connection with that incident in Coralville, a longtime police officer there died from a medical emergency while he was responding to that call about that child. Sergeant John Williams suffered what was called an acute medical emergency while he was responding to the call about Demaria Sanders. He was a 28-year veteran of the Coralville Police Department. In the northeast Iowa city of Waukon last week, the mayor faced two counts of child endangerment. Patrick Stone was elected mayor in 2019. Meanwhile, a former East Iowa school therapist was sentenced to more than a decade in prison after having a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old student and buying him a gun. 46-year-old Miranda Breeden had pleaded guilty to pursuing a romantic relationship with the underage boy in 2019 and 2020. At that time, she was a mental health therapist at the Cedar Rapids Community School District's Polk Alternative Education Center, where she had a therapist-patient relationship with the student. The judge who sentenced her called her conduct horribly egregious. In Des Moines, two city police officers sued 6 protesters, including a current city council member, who they allege assaulted them during a chaotic scene 2 years ago. It was a protest in front of the state capitol during ongoing unrest that began after the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. Des Moines officers Peter Wilson and Jeffrey George accused Councilmember Indira Shoemaker of assault and battery, along with 5 other protesters. A strange story out of southern Iowa last week, where a beach was closed after a swimmer was diagnosed with an amoeba that is commonly called a brain-eating amoeba. The swimmer is a Missouri resident who may have been exposed to the amoeba at Lake of Three Fires State Park in Taylor County. Iowa health officials are working to confirm the infection in the lake. The amoeba can cause a rare, life-threatening infection of the brain. It cannot be spread from one person to another. On the coronavirus front in Iowa, word that the State Department of Health had reported 3,980 new cases of the virus last week, just 8 fewer than the week before. The new cases were enough to send Iowa's total coronavirus case count to about 800,000 since the start of the pandemic in March of 2020. That means about 1 in every 4 state residents have tested positive for the virus. Meanwhile, 190 people were said to be hospitalized with the virus in Iowa last week, up from 162 the week before. And 15 more coronavirus-related deaths were reported, bringing the state's death toll from the virus to 9,703. In the world of politics last week, a report that a Democratic state House candidate had been charged with reckless use of a firearm after police said she shot a gun through a sliding glass door in her home. Sonia Heitschusen is running in House District 28, which includes parts of West Des Moines, Van Meter, and Adele. She said she's received a variety of threats over the years because of her previous career as an anchor at WHO-TV. She said her partner is a police officer, and there are firearms in her home for personal protection. She said she was checking one of those firearms when it went off. She has pleaded not guilty to the charge. In the nation's capital this past Friday, members of the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee got together again to talk once more about setting the presidential nominating calendar for 2024, and about, among other things, whether Iowa should continue holding its first-in-the-nation caucuses. No decision on Friday, but one is expected by early August. Also last week, word that Wells Fargo & Company had announced another round of layoffs in the Des Moines Metro, more than doubling the number of workers at the banking giant who have lost jobs in central Iowa so far this year. Wells Fargo is said to have laid off 107 workers in Ankeny, Des Moines, and West Des Moines. That brings the total number of jobs cut since last April to 197. The reason was said to be a downturn in the housing market. Wells Fargo's home mortgage division is based in West Des Moines, and the company is the metro's biggest private employer, with about 13,000 workers. In other Iowa news last week, details were released about a third proposed carbon capture pipeline in the state, one that would transport liquid carbon dioxide from ethanol plants in Cedar Rapids and Clinton, 90 miles up through five Iowa counties. Wolf Carbon Solutions, a Canadian company that has operated one of North America's biggest carbon pipelines, wants to hold public hearings in September in the affected counties. The company has an agreement with the Archer Daniels Midland Company to transport captured carbon dioxide from ADM ethanol plants to Illinois, where it would be pumped deep into the ground. It's the third proposal in less than a year to build carbon capture pipelines in Iowa, and this one is smaller than the others. And last week, word that members who serve on Iowa's Board of Regents have made monetary and in-kind political donations totaling nearly $340,000 since 2019, with most going either to Governor Kim Reynolds, who makes appointments to the board, or to the Republican Party of Iowa. The state code requires the 9-member board governing Iowa's public universities to have gender and political balance, meaning it cannot have more than 5 members of the same gender or political party. The current board includes 5 women and 4 men. 5 are Republicans, 1 is a Democrat, and 3 are independents. There is no restriction or regulations on regents' political giving. And that is your summary of another busy week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, thanking you for listening and inviting you to tune in again tonight at 7 on KHOI, when Laura Bellin and I will be here for Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything going on in Iowa politics and what it all means. Then I'll pay a return visit to Local Talk on Friday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what's making news in Ames. So now you know what I'll be doing, and I hope you're here for all of it. In the meantime, let's both try to have a safe, healthy, and happy week.
Get your sweets from the candy man. Get your truth from the shelf. Don't buy into the fairy tale. Just be good to yourself. You know that I love you, girl. You're my way out of hell. But I've just one more song to sing, one more story to tell.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And yes, have a safe, healthy, and happy week. And the music interlude for this broadcast is by Tears to Fears, No Small Thing. And here's more to learn about No Small Things. Let's welcome Fred Love from C.Y. Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. And you've got some information about C.Y. Stevens, I understand.
Yeah, a few weeks back, we announced our full performing arts season for our performing arts series for 2022-2023. And there's something for everybody. We've got 17 shows that start in September and go all the way through April. There is contemporary music, there's Broadway, there's comedy. We've even got an acrobatic show. So really something for everybody, and we just want the community to know that we've got these awesome performing arts events going on right here in Ames.
Well, this is, pretty exciting and genuinely no small thing. The music venue that C.Y. Stevens provides all of Iowa, but particularly here at Ames, what a cultural center. What was the youth programming that you mentioned?
So this is the performing arts series. This is it's a little bit of everything. 17 shows, and something. It's music. It's we've got 5 Broadway shows and even comedy and acrobatics as well.
Well, maybe it's the acrobatics that I thought of with youth, but yeah, excuse me about that.
Yeah, no problem. We do have some educational, yes, obviously Stevens Auditorium has a mandate for providing educational programming. We do have student-centered shows throughout the year that school kids from across the state attend at pretty low cost.
Oh, well, that's quite an impressive outreach. Yeah, that's great. They get to come to the big city and do something in a big auditorium. Like C.Y. Stevens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, we think it's pretty neat to have school kids from all over the place get to experience the performing arts on a world-class stage like ours. Yeah,
world-class stage, absolutely. Yeah. How long have you been active with C.Y. Stevens, Mr. Love?
That's a good question. I've actually only been in this job. I am the director of marketing and sales. I've been in the job a little less than 2 months, so still very new to the position. I've got lots to learn, but one thing that I don't have to learn is how to be excited about the events that we've got going on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I've been going to shows to Stevens since college.
Are you from Iowa? Are you learning about C.Y. Stevens, or did you visit it at other points in your life?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Northeast Iowa, a really small town, but I went to Iowa State in 2004 and almost immediately started going to my first shows at Stevens Auditorium. I think my first one was Henry Rollins doing Spoken Word, and that was a free show for ISU students, and I was a big punk rock fan, and it was my first time seeing Henry Rollins in the flesh. And it was a wonderful experience, and I've been going to shows at Stevens basically ever since. I've had some wonderful moments there.
Well, are there others that kind of come to mind, or what is it about your current lineup that you're most excited about, other than the diversity of it?
Yeah, so I'm a music guy. I love live music, and so we've got some pretty awesome musical events coming up during our performing arts series. First of all, we've got Three Dog Night, which I think are genuine music legends. That is October 6th. In addition, we've got a couple of other cool shows that I'd point out. The Fab Four, which is a Beatles tribute, is September 30th. And then we've got this awesome show called Respect, which is sort of the life and music of Aretha Franklin, and that's March 4th. So even
wow.
though we can't really experience the Beatles and Aretha Franklin in person anymore, we can still experience their music. And these are some of the best songs in the popular music canon, I think.
Well, absolutely. If you can bear with me a little bit, in the spring of 1970, Three Dog Night came to Iowa. I think it was down in Des Moines where I saw them. Might have been at C.Y. Stevens. But long and short of it, they had a new release at that time, Celebrate. And it was done live. And it was just when live recordings were essentially listenable. Up until then, a lot of times live recordings were kind of hard to, get the full appreciation. But boy, when Three Dog Night came out with Celebrate, it set the music industry alight because it sounded so good. And yeah, those guys, they're still at it.
They are, yep. And we'll have them at Stevens Auditorium. I think there's a several-year streak maybe from like 1969 to 1972 or something like that where Three Dog Night sold more records than just about anybody in the world. So I'm a real music legend, songs that everybody knows, and you'll be able to hear them live, hear your name.
Right, and it's so exciting that some of the youth are going to have the opportunity to hear the music that their parents and grandparents we got excited about. But the Fab Four, now where are they, where did they originate from?
Well, they are, I think, among the very premier Beatles tribute acts on the circuit these days, and they go for a real authentic experience. I think they try to play the Beatles catalog as closely as to how the Beatles played it at the time as possible. So that means, in addition to just knowing the parts, they try to use authentic equipment and really try to capture the sound and the feel of what it was like to actually see those lads from Liverpool live in the 60s.
Oh my gosh, that sounds really interesting. I wonder if they're, curious about their ages and then and where they originated. Are they British?
I'm not sure. I haven't had a chance to meet them or see them live yet, but I will hopefully have answers to all those questions after they play.
Well, but it's going to be entertaining. I know KJY invited a Beatles group that were formed to play like the Beatles, and they were called Rocky Raccoon. And boy, that nostalgia really goes a long ways. And it kind of goes to show how the basic harmonies that the Beatles made it sound so easy, but they have really, these other groups now are really honoring those guys that were so popular back in the 60s.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely an amount of nostalgia that helps to create the appeal for those kind of tribute acts. But I also think that it's just the timelessness of the songs. Those are some of the best songs ever written in rock and roll or popular music, and people still sing them today. People still love to hear them today. Mm-hmm. And this is just a chance to hear them in a format that a lot of people missed out on, decades ago, since the Beatles haven't played together in so long.
And I'm going to show my age again, but back in the 60s, pop music, bands kind of came and went. And boy, to last 10 years, that was really kind of a big deal. The music industry was changing. We learned to love what we liked at the time. But growing up in the early 70s, it seemed like the music that we were hearing, and it was starting to become pretty obvious that we were going to listen to this music all our lives. And I don't know if it's just my older generation that kind of felt that way, but we weren't going to give it up. The progression, and of course, music has always progressed, and that's why I like to listen to the newer groups, and they're not even new anymore, like Public Enemy or some of the rap music stuff. But yeah, when it comes to the Fab Four, that's going to be an entertaining evening for sure. And I hope
definitely one of the highlights.
Yeah, and I hope people can really appreciate Aretha Franklin's contributions to soul and rock and roll. Now, is it a group that's coming to pay respects to Aretha, or is it, how is this going to be set up?
Yeah, well, it's a group. It's a stage production. But so my understanding is that it tells the story of Aretha Franklin's life, and then also features many of her best known songs. So it's kind of a combination of a stage production and a concert.
But honoring somebody who is a giant in the music industry, for those that don't have the full appreciation, my goodness, Aretha Franklin is near, she's the queen of soul, I guess you'd say.
And maybe, maybe one of the, definitely one of the best singers in popular music history, maybe the best singer.
Well, you seem to be pretty knowledgeable on this. This is kind of fascinating to pick your brain just a little bit. So, the music venue at C.Y. Stevens, kind of our Carnegie Hall of Iowa. And what were some of the other, is there any ballet I'm curious about? It used to be the Joffrey Ballet would come.
Yeah, we don't have ballet on this year's schedule, but we do have a classical music offering. We've got Les Violons du Roy, That's April 22nd. That's, you know, chamber music. There's some other shows that I would like to point out that
yes.
When people are just looking through the schedule, they might not know what they are, but I'd really encourage people.
And we'll have this on our website, of course.
Awesome. Yeah. And you can find the full schedule at center.iastate.edu. I should mention that.
Center, yeah.
The first show in our performing arts series is Card Amendment, and they are a Finnish foursome that sing like traditional Finnish folk music. And they play traditional Finnish instruments. And so if that's, you know, if you're a little bit more adventurous and you really want to expose yourself to something new, but also something quite beautiful, that would be a show to check out. We've also got the Red Hot Chili Pipers towards the end of the season in March. And they are an actual rock band, a Scottish rock band that features bagpipes. And they've got quite a stage show. I think that's going to be a pretty unique experience. And then, you know, if you're a Broadway fan, we've got a couple of timeless classics. We've got Annie. We've got My Fair Lady, which are, I guess I was talking to my boss yesterday. My Fair Lady has been through Stevens just about every decade since the 70s.
Oh, my goodness.
This year. And then, but then we've also got like Hairspray. That's the first time Hairspray will be at Stevens Auditorium, will be in February. We've got Stomp. We've got Anastasia, which is kind of a newer Broadway production. And then Who's Live Anyway? If anyone still remembers Who's Line Anyway, that pretty hilarious comedy show that used to have Drew Carey on it. We've got Who's Live Anyway, which is a live version of that. It doesn't have Drew Carey, but it has some of the other cast.
Okay. Uh-huh. So the Stomp, is that the River Dance? Tell me about Stomp,
river
please.
Dance. Stomp is it is a dance-heavy, rhythm-heavy production where it's they use lots of different kinds of percussion instruments. In addition to drums, I think they use garbage cans and tools and pipes.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And really it's almost like a drum line experience where they've got these really driving rhythms all the time, really impressive dancing and choreography.
Okay. I was wondering. That's powerfully entertaining for people like
that's
me.
That's November 6th.
Yeah. Well, and My Fair Lady, my goodness, every 10 years since the 1970s, when was that production going to be aired?
My Fair Lady, let me just consult my schedule one more time. That is February 13th.
We're going to put that one on the calendar for sure. Well, Mr. Love, we've got a few more minutes, but so what is it about your new position that's most exciting to you?
Well, what's most exciting to me is just the chance to work in that building and to help to so Stevens Auditorium has really done a lot for me. It's provided some life-changing experiences for me for some of the concerts that I've seen there that really inspired me and influenced the direction of my life. And now I get to help to put on those same sorts of experiences for other people in this community. And that really means something to me. I'm really excited about that. And I hope that excitement is infectious and other folks in the community can feel that as well. And I hope they come out to a show.
Oh, that's great. I love that empowerment that you just kind of laid out for your life. But it's inspirational to so many others that... It sounds like you're doing well and doing good things, and it's hard to get too much of that.
Lots to learn. It's a pretty steep learning curve, but we're getting there.
But what a fabulous position to have that opportunity to continue to learn and learn about entertainment, learn about groups. I hope to have you back on in the future. Then this is pretty exciting, and it's really nice meeting you. Fred Love, is there anything else?
Just check out center.iastate.edu. We've got a full schedule of awesome events and hope to see you at a show.
Okay, well, thank you, Fred Love from CY Stevens. And that lineup will be on the website. It is 7:31, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio on 89.1 FM. And I'm Pat Schlarb. I'm your Monday local talk host with engineer Mike Murphy. Hey, let's welcome Eric Schmidt, Communications Director for the Ames High School System. Good morning, Mr. Schmidt.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good to have you with us, Eric. Good to see your smiling face here. I've had the opportunity to visit the old high school recently. I'll kind of save that story for later. But you're in the process of a big transition, aren't you?
Yeah, this is a really big, big summer for us. You know, one that the community said we should move forward with all the way back in 2018. You know, I remember in April 2018, we spent the better part of that school year engaging with our community and talking about the need for a new high school. And of course, we went through with the bond referendum at that time, and overwhelmingly, you know, the Ames community voted in favor for the school district to move forward and build a new high school. And then suddenly, you know, you blink and we have this really big building that we're now preparing to open here in just a couple months.
It's quite a footprint on that portion of Ames. I guess I'm going to call it the northwest corner of Iowa Creek.
Yeah.
And
it's really going to be absolutely wonderful. You know, I've been fortunate. Now it's been nearly a month since I've been in there, and every time I do, you know, something new has changed, and everything is kind of funneling towards that conclusion of finalization and so that we can open in August. But it really is a wonderful building.
Uh-huh. I hear great things about it, and I'm curious now, what about all the memorabilia in the older building?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So Judge Johnson, our previous athletic director, who now works for the Boys and Girls Club of Story County, he has actually taken the lead on this. And so, you know, he has some deep roots within the Ames school community. And of course, you know, he led our athletic department for a long time. And so, you know, he's really engaged in this work over the course of his career with us. And so he put together a committee, and, you know, we had to make decisions about, you know, what moves over from our old high school into our new high school. And obviously memorabilia was one of those pieces that we needed to consider. And so he put a committee together, and, you know, they put some criteria to what do we keep, what don't we keep. So, you know, this is, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a joking question, but, you know, that third place track trophy from, you know, the meet in Marshalltown from 1973, you know, what do we do with that? And so obviously, we're keeping all of the, you know, state championship trophies, which, you know, Ames High has been fortunate to keep. We're going to keep the runner-up trophies and a few other key ones. Some of the other ones, you know, will be up for people to get if they want. And then some of, like, the images, one of the great hallmarks of the previous high school was when you go into the gymnasium and up on the balcony, you know, we had all of these pictures. One of our post open up a building projects will be to digitize all of those images and then have a kiosk in our new high school so that, you know, when people come in for a basketball game there, you know, they can page through and have all of it. And I really do think that that's a great way to maintain our deep history.
Right. What to leave in, what to take out. You have an opportunity to kind of move forward and what to leave behind makes a lot of sense. But it sounds like you're very conscientious, I'm sure, this committee. And what was the man's name with the Girls and Boys Club?
Judge Johnston.
Judge Johnston. Well, I'm sure he's hitting up, you know, as a try to emphasize people with a conscience and what to leave in, what to take out, what to move forward with is so critical. But the Girls and Boys Club, so will there be things that he'll be able to repurpose, I wonder?
You know, that is a great question. I know that he's been staffed with really working with our memorabilia at this point. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, you know, of course, perhaps some of it. I don't know that I could get into the specifics of that uh-huh. quite yet.
Well, it's great. It's comforting to know that somebody that has a legacy with the Ames High School is going to carry that on and ensure that things aren't left out or forgotten about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is kind of a reference to recently we located, through the help of a family here at Ames, a grandfather's clock that was at the Ames High School. Have you heard about that story?
No, I haven't heard about that story.
Okay, well, some of our listeners, I'll kind of bring up to speed, but there was a clock that a young man made in VOAG vocational training class in 1929, 1930, and he made a grandfather's clock. His name was Max Wilcox, and he took it to the Iowa State Fair and won all the awards that year, 1930, at the Iowa State Fair. And then the drama club paid him, you know, his expenses for, he had to buy some things to make this clock. And then it was donated to the Ames High School. And
wow.
And it was there on Clark Street for decades and decades. And then it made the transition up to the new location. And maybe it's going to go to the new school or maybe not, but a family member, her name is Gillette West. And, it's really a charming story, and she was able to track down the clock and learn that it was going to be on the auction of memorabilia, and now it's going to be kind of separated and preserved in another manner, but it goes back, you know, whatever it is, 92 years, 93 years.
That's really incredible.
Yeah, yeah, it was right by where the teachers have their little cubbyhole mail room, so to speak, there in the Ames High School is where it was located when it was rediscovered. But I was asking then about what's the tall part of the new building, and learned that's the auditorium.
Yep, that's the fly loft. So, you know, one of the things, you know, on the auditorium as we, you know, go through this entire construction project, you know, couple summers ago, we kind of had a pinch point because, you know, we were using our current building. We were using the parking lot, you know, which is now where our yeah. new building is located. And so we had a pinch point during that summer. And actually COVID, you know, in some ways kind of helped us with that, you know, as schools shut down. Perhaps the one good thing that happened during that summer was that we could move into that parking lot and take it over for the construction project a little bit earlier than we had anticipated. And so since then, the construction project has been going on, and it's always been, you know, like this pinhole of a light at the end of the tunnel. And now suddenly, wow, you know, we're starting to feel that fresh air of getting out of the tunnel of construction, which is, you know, really exciting for us as a school district. It's exciting for us as a community, but it also means like, whoa, you know, the to-do list, you know, really has to get done. The one piece, and we've talked about this before publicly, the one piece that we might have some holdover as we go into August as far as, you know, finalizing some of the interior is the auditorium. You know, our construction crews, they've really been focusing on the academic areas and the areas within the building that, you know, we need to use on day one. And the auditorium is, you know, one of those, you know, areas of our new building that, you know, we don't necessarily need on day one. And so that could be where, you know, we leave some of the tasks, you know, at post opening, you know, to finish up some of those areas in the auditorium.
Sure, sure. And like other construction projects, you think, well, is this going to be completed in time? And then people band together and they get her done.
You know, it really is incredible. I've been fortunate enough to talk with our director of facilities, you know, so he's our point person to this project. We do have a construction management firm with Story Construction, and together the process that they go through is absolutely incredible. We have a trailer, you know, that is on site that really has tracked the entire project and the to-do list throughout the entire project. And one of the really neat things that they do is that, you know, they have daily check-ins and weekly meetings with all the subcontractors, and they go through, Story Construction goes through what their weekly list is, and even sometimes daily list. And so then they track, well, did you get your task complete done, you know, today or this week? And you know, it's a yes or no answer. And they ask yes or no, not as a judgment type thing if something didn't get done, but they really want to understand, you know, well, what barriers did you run into to not get, you know, a certain project done? And sometimes the supplies didn't come in on time, and sometimes they didn't have the right equipment. And it's really been neat because a lot of these subcontractors, they would say, for example, oh, you know, I need two lifts in order to be able to complete this project. Right now we only have one on site, so, you know, we couldn't get that done today. And you see another subcontractor come in and say, oh, well, we have two lifts on site, but we're only using one. Why don't you use mine? And so the efficiency at which they've been able to complete tasks has been up near 80% on a weekly basis. And I'm told that industry standard is much closer to 55%.
Oh, my goodness.
And
yeah.
So it's really been interesting and wonderful to be able to just watch that process and understand how that process unfolds.
And when you were initially starting to think about this project in 2018, I think you said, that was before COVID. And my gosh.
Yeah.
When you first came to the Ames school system, did you foresee this role of kind of watching over the construction of a new school when you started?
Well, actually, a little bit, yes. The school district, so I just concluded my fifth year within the district as director of communications. And so the school district had already initially started talking about this. Now, of course, there's no bond referendum yet that was approved, and so it wasn't a go. But of course, you know, they have to understand, you know, where is our current high school at? And so they started some of this work already. And in fact, my key project that my very first year that I was in the district was to work on this bond referendum to help our community understand. And so I really have been with this project in many ways from the ground up, at least from a communication standpoint.
Sure. Well, and keep that 80% of projects on time in the rest of your life. That's a really good one to focus on.
We will take it.
Okay, and one other topic I've heard that, how about the gymnasium? Any news about, did Harrison Barnes get involved with your new gymnasium?
Yeah, so a couple years ago, we announced, you know, we named the gymnasium and court in his honor. You know, he's probably, at least from an athletic standpoint, the highest profile, you know, athlete that we've had come out of Ames High. And quite honestly, one can make an argument out of the state of Iowa, you know, as a whole. During the time that he was at Ames High, you know, he won a couple state championships.
In basketball.
Owned the records. But then, you know, what he's done, you know, post high school and collegiate career has really been incredible. He really has a big heart, and he really puts a lot of time and effort, you know, when not playing in the NBA, towards philanthropy. And every community that he goes into, he is donating not only his money, but his time to make his community better. And what a great ambassador of not only the state of Iowa, but certainly, you know, Ames, Iowa. And so, you know, he did donate some money for some upgrades to our gymnasium. The gymnasium is named in his honor. I know that we are working on scheduling a time when he can come back down to Ames and he can actually, you know, stand and be in the gymnasium that has his name on the court. So we're really looking forward to that.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds really exciting. And I agree. There's been a lot of Ames graduates that have excelled in many, many different occupations. But He's one that to be linked with the new high school gymnasium, that's pretty special. Well, is there anything else, Mr. Schmidt?
Yeah, well, just really on that note, you know, our school board did just approve the naming of our pool as well in honor of Dan Flannery. So he was a longtime swimming coach, you know, at Ames High. He has a record of excellence with, you know, 9 state titles as coach. You know, he was a wonderful swimmer as well individually, but the impact that he's had on students, you know, has really been incredible. And unfortunately, in 2020, you know, he unexpectedly passed away. And so the school board did take that step just recently to name the pool in his honor. And so we're really excited about that as well.
Well, that's great. What a great story to leave off with. I know you're touching a lot of people's lives. It goes without saying, in the community, the high school, what an integral, one of a key aspect of any community. So this is a pretty exciting story, and we really wish you well, Mr. Schmidt, and in all your future endeavors, but sure look forward to seeing the new high school.
Great. Well, thank you for having us on.
Okay. Thank you, Eric Schmidt. He's Communication Director for the Ames High School. Let's welcome Melissa Spencer, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. And we're normally talking with Keith Morgan. I understand Keith is going to retire.
Yeah, Keith retired at the end of this last month, and I'm sure is enjoying not having to wake up with severe weather first thing in the morning. We had a bit of a bumpy start this morning.
Well, we sure have. My alarm went off at 4:45, or the announcement, and I was in the studio here without any windows, and about 5, I could hear the wind. And we've got branches, trees down right here on 7th Avenue.
Yeah, we were hearing, I was hearing this morning of some winds, probably 48 to 50 mile an hour wind gusts this morning with those storms that came through. We were hearing of some tree branches that had gotten blown down in Ames and some isolated power outages this morning. So overall, we came out pretty good. But it's just a reminder that, you know, those 40, 50 mile an hour winds certainly can cause some damages as they do roll through the county.
Well, and congratulations on your new position. Are you from Story County, or can you hear a little bit about your background?
Yeah, actually, I have been the deputy coordinator here at Emergency Management for the last 14 years, kind of the person behind the scenes assisting when needed. So this was a nice step up for me. Mm-hmm. My background previous to this, I was a telecommunicator at Story County Sheriff's Office for 10 years, and then did everything from training to supervision. And then also way back when, in the early 1990s, I was a volunteer firefighter and EMT for the city of Nevada. So I do come from a background of first response. And this is just a really nice way to be able to continue to serve the county and the communities.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can't get out there and be fighting the fires and be in the ditches at 2 o'clock in the morning. So this is a nice way to continue my service.
Well, this is wonderful because your position, I'm sure you create a lot of trust in your profession.
Yeah, I mean, really a lot of what emergency management is building those relationships with people, building them with first responders, building them with community leaders, business leaders, industry, pretty much everybody in the community, trying to bring them to the table to try to reach a common goal, whether it be economic recovery from a disaster or trying to do hazard mitigation planning to try to work together to figure out how we can lessen the effects of a disaster in the future that would impact the county.
Well, we put a lot of confidence in your position, for sure. And I understand a word that we hadn't ever really heard until a few years ago about derecho. And that word even came up again today on Dennis Hart's news that we had essentially a derecho situation recently again.
Yeah, the storms just this past week that started clear up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and traversed the whole state, they did attach derecho to that, and that was due to the sustained winds in the storm. Luckily, we did not get the 80-mile-an-hour winds that they had up in the Sioux Falls area, but we still probably had wind gusts of 40 to 50, but that storm held together well through the entire state of Iowa. There's a lot of specific criteria that the National Weather Service sets with that that I'm not quite up to speed on all of it yet, but winds, duration of the storm, how long it holds together, are all things that they look at to attach that derecho word. Yeah, we have certainly had an uptick. Not exactly 100% sure why we've had that change or why that has become more common. But really, they, you know, as we saw a couple of years ago, they really can pack some destructive winds, you know. And here in Story County, we have a policy that when the winds in a storm are estimated to be 70 miles an hour or more, whether it's reported by the Weather Service or by one of our trained spotters, or if we end up with hail that's golf ball size, so about 1¾ inches, we do ask that the communication center set off the outdoor warning sirens to try to encourage people to get inside, tune into their local news media, and see what's going on.
And maybe not to pick your brain as a meteorologist, but that derecho, a lot of amazing green sky photos.
Yeah, those were a bit scary, you know, because they always talked about, at least I remember when I was a kid coming up, that right before you were going to get tornadoes, the sky would turn a interesting shade of green.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've never seen skies that color in my life. And so, yeah, that was, I can see, could be a bit terrifying to people up in the northwest part of the state and into South Dakota when that came on. Those were very impressive.
Yeah, I remember growing up, and I called them dinner roll clouds, just little puffy, you know, a pattern of dinner rolls, or I think it's stratocumulus conditions that create that.
Yeah, usually when you see those kind of cotton ballish type clouds, it usually means you're going to be in for some bumpy weather. So
yeah.
Even though they look pretty, usually something could be coming, or something really bad has just passed.
Yeah, it does seem to be that way. So are there new goals that you're setting out for emergency management here in Story County? Or
I don't know if we have as much as new goals.
It's
to still strive to continue to help our communities and the county become as disaster resilient as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We will be starting our next update to the countywide hazard mitigation plan here probably later on this year and into next year. And we do encourage public participation in that. So our social media will carry information about meetings. We will also be putting it out on the county webpage, where we will encourage the public to participate as we take a look at the natural and man-made disasters that impact Story County and have conversations with the jurisdictions and the unincorporated areas of the county to figure out how are there things that we can be doing to lessen the effects of next time. We know we can't always stop it, but what can we do to mitigate it the next time?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think
so. That'll be a big project coming up in the future here shortly.
But just more, kind of more of the very competent, very professional standards that Mr. Keith Morgan put forward that we've enjoyed for a number of years. It sounds like it's just more of the same, but watching and willing to take on any new opportunities for outreach, I'm sure will be very important to you.
Yeah, I mean, Keith was a great mentor to me for the last 11 years and really taught me a lot to prepare me for this position. But I am looking forward to some new projects that will be coming up hazard mitigation. And some new planning projects that will be coming down the pike that have been mandated by the federal government. that I will be looking forward to really kind of getting people involved and getting to kind of make those my own, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Well, sure, sure. Is there anything else, Melissa?
I know Keith has talked pretty extensively in the past about the Story County, Iowa alert system. This morning with the severe weather that rolled through, there is an opportunity if the public goes to Story County, Iowa alerts and signs up, they can select to receive severe weather notifications to their phones 24/7. I will tell you, they will wake you up if you have your volume up on your phone. And then also that system is used to share emergency information in the in times of disaster in Story County. So if they go to the Story County webpage, there's a couple different links. There's one on the front page, I believe still. And then also if they go to emergency management's page, we have a link for how the public can sign up for that. So we just encourage folks to get signed up on that so they can stay aware of any disasters or emergencies that would be impacting Story County.
Story County Alert. And Melissa, I really enjoyed your slogan on your ID on your email. Courage does not always roar. Sometimes courage is the quiet voice at the end of the day saying, I will try again tomorrow.
Yep.
I love that.
And I wholeheartedly believe in that. There's days we sometimes feel we're conquering mountains, but sometimes we have to remind ourselves to say stop. Either let's take a pause and take a breath and come back to it tomorrow, or I've done everything I can today. We'll come back and reattack at a later time. So that helps me keep my sanity.
and tomorrow is another day. So thank you so much.
Exactly.
It's so nice meeting you, and we'll look forward to your monthly installments here on KHOI. You're Melissa Spencer, the Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have interest in joining the Local Talk team, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas Avenue, where KHOI, the heart of Iowa, is streaming live on our website, khoifm.org. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website, KHOIFM, and find the yellow donate button. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Monday report. And thanks to our guest, Fred Love from the ISU C.Y. Stevens Center, Eric Schmidt, Communications Director for the Ames High School, and Melissa Spencer, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. And thank you, Engineer Mike Murphy, for engineering this program and all that you do for KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artists you heard were Tears to Fears, No Small Thing. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! And Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. with KHOI's own Paul Hertz. And don't forget Capital Week at 7 p.m. this evening with Laura Bellin and Dennis Hart. And hoping you have a great week and enjoying some beautiful summer weather. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.